Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Brain Cola. I'm your host, Christian Jude, and we are going to talk about some really practical stuff. I know I tend to talk about like heady stuff, philosophical stuff. That's the stuff that I love. But I also really enjoy talking more practical things, things that you can use right away in your life to improve your own life or the improve the life of those around you, because that's what this podcast is here for. I'm not just here to make you chuckle. You know, this isn't a Netflix special. I'm not John Mulaney. I am your wise, old, bearded grandfather who speaks in fortune cookie. That's what I'm going to do. But today I'm more like an empathy coach, because we're going to talk about how to be a better customer. Yes. We're going to flip the script on customer service, and we're going to look at the other side of it. How can we be a better customer? We'll talk about that more coming up, but just wanted to give you guys a life update. It's episode 10. We did it. They said it couldn't be done. They say that most podcasts do not make it to 10 episodes. Well, gosh dang it, Bobby. Gosh dang it, Bobby. We made it to 10 episodes. So to everybody who's ever listened, anybody who follows on Spoofy, Spotify, any of the other platforms, who's interacted, who has reached out to me and said, hey, I like the pod. Thank you so much. You made this possible. You are what keeps me going. So thank you. We made it to episode 10. Here's to another 10 more, and then 20, and then 30, and then we're episode 100, and then we can throw a party. So if you want to have a sick, nasty party, a Brain Cola party, we got to get to 100. But we start at 10. Lao Tzu said, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. That is from the Tao Te Ching, which I recommend you read. It's got some great stuff in it. Also, today, happy National Georgia Day. So if everybody's listening from Georgia, happy National Georgia Day. But it's not only National Georgia Day. No. Even more fun, it is National Watermelon Day. So eat some watermelon. Watermelon, fun fact, very low in calorie. I think something like, I want to say like 500 grams, which is like a really large bowl of it, is only 200 calories or something like that. I know this because that is a key evening time snack when I'm on my cut, which I am now back in. Took a week off from the tracking and the cut. Just kind of let my body reset. Now we're going to go back into it. We also started a new workout plan today, MAPS Performance, which is by Mind Pump Media. I ran it last year right around this time. It's more of like an athletic performance-based type workout, and it kicked my butt today. I am exhausted. So that was fun. But yeah, happy National Watermelon Day. Also, it's also National Grab Some Nuts Day. Do with that what you'd like. I'm thinking of almonds, whatever you want to call it, walnuts, perhaps, Brazil nuts, hazelnuts, pecans, whatever you call it. Grab some nuts. And I'm talking about the legumes. I'm talking about the seeds here, not other nuts. So grab some nuts in Georgia while eating watermelon, I guess. That's what we'll leave it at that. Have you used some other words for butt that we talked about last week? Have you? Butts? Have you used Laffy Taffy? Have you used Man Bacon? Those are good names. I'm just out here trying to expand your vocabulary. I want to make you sound smarter-ish. Okay? Got it? Very good. I also turned 25 in a week. Actually, I'll be recording the episode 11 on my birthday, so that'll be fun. That'll be an interesting episode. So I'm going to be 25. I feel old. I don't want to get into it. I want to save it for next week. So yeah, a lot of fun stuff happening. A lot of fun stuff. Working on music. Oh, the Lowlands EP is now on Spotify. You can find me, Christian Jude, not only at Brain Cola, but on Spotify. The Lowlands EP is on Spotify. And I would follow because there's a new song coming out super duper soon. And you want to be there for it because it's going to be weird and very different. So follow me on Spotify. What are you doing? Also, go follow me on all the socials. If you're not following me on the socials yet, follow me on the socials. Twitter, Christian Jude H. Instagram, TikTok, Christian.Jude.H. Is TikTok going to be banned? I don't know. Mr. Tramp keeps talking about it. Just, if you're going to do it, commit. I don't care. Just commit and just do it. Quit beating around the bush. My gosh. Just do it. Nike, just do it. Also, Spotify, why can't we write comments on songs / podcasts yet? Why can't we write reviews? Why can't we 5-star things? Let's go. Also, TikTok, why is there no dislike button? I want to tailor my news feed. There's a bunch of stuff on there that I don't care about. Get with it. It's 2020, although that really means nothing anymore, given the circumstances. With all the technology we have, the world has been shut down by a virus. That's where we are. But I don't want to get too... Listen, man, we're trying to keep this upbeat. This is a family-friendly podcast. So let's just go into the main topic. This is good. I'm very passionate about this. How do you become a better customer? Now, let me give you some of my background. I have worked a few jobs in my life. I cleaned instruments. That was awful. Not going to even lie. Did that for a couple years over the summers and a little bit during the year. I would legitimately clean musical instruments, and the colors that would seep out of trombones and saxophones was truly heinous. We found gummy bears in a berry sax neck. We found mallets within tubas that we thought was a dead animal. That was not a fun job. I also worked a front desk at a music store. That was kind of weird. That was a very short blip. But then I worked in retail. I worked at a home center. For 3.5 years, I worked at a home center. I was a sales associate, so I was on the floor helping people out, merchandising, stacking stuff, doing my retail thing. And now I work for that same company, but I work at the corporate level, to use big terms, so I can affect change at a higher level, which has been just the bomb. It's been thebomb.com. So, but I worked in retail for 3.5 years. So I know the struggles of working in retail. Anybody out there that works in the service industry, really any service, you know, whether you're a waiter, a retail associate, sales, whatever, if you're in the service, hospitality, anything like that, God bless your souls. You are the working class. You are the unsung heroes often. So I feel for you. And like I said, I was there, so I know. And a lot of times we're taught, you know, how can we better interact with customers? How can we be better to the customer? How can we amaze them more? How can we get them to return? How can we build the relationship with our customers? You know, we're told that often, and for good reason. I mean, customer service is a weird kind of job because it's very thankless most of the time, and a lot is expected of, especially of retail workers. I'm going to speak mostly from the retail worker perspective, because a lot is expected of you. You're kind of expected to keep things stocked and check in items and do tons of other tasks, and while also upkeeping a very high level of customer service, and that's very challenging. Some days, especially when, you know, you're having a bit, you know, you're in an industry where you kind of have to leave your attitude at the door and you got to come in there and show up. That's very tough some days, to pretend that you're happy when you're not. That is super duper challenging. That actually leads to a lot of emotional burnout, and it's very high among the service industry overall. So I feel for those people, because I was there. I've had many breakdowns. But anyways, the thing that doesn't get talked about is how can we be better customers in the retail space? I feel like I have a good enough perspective as a retail worker, especially considering that I was a leader at my store that I was working at. I can offer some helpful tips on how you can be a better customer, because guess what? The people in the retail space get used and abused every single day. It is awful. And we'll talk about more of how that happens and why that happens and how we can fix that, because we all can be better customers. I mean, the tips that I'm going to give, I'm guilty of not doing these things, but I try to be more cognizant of it, especially considering that I know what it feels like. And that's what I think has been really good about working in retail, is that it does make you a better customer, because it gives you that perspective. Because no one knows what it takes to do basically any job. That's any job, service industry or otherwise. Nobody knows what really goes on behind the scenes of retail workers or doctors or nurses or politicians. Like if you've never done it, you don't know. You don't. So before you give opinions on things, this is a total side note. Before you give opinions on how people do their jobs, be cognizant of if you have that experience directly or not, because you don't really know the whole picture unless you've been there, which is a good reason to explore as many fields as you can, learn about as many things, because it'll make you a better leader. The more perspective you have, the better leader you'll be, because you can empathize and sympathize with the people you lead, the people in your charge, not the people you're bossing around, but the people that you're leading. So I have one. Let's see. How many do I have here? How many to write down? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 5. 5 tips on how to be a better customer. These are surefire ways, again, from a retail worker. How to be a better customer. All right, let's dive in. Number one, overall. If you do this, you're going to hit all the other ones, most likely. So here's a perspective. Number one, look at retail workers as a person first and a worker second. Okay? I feel like a lot of times customers, again, this is including me, we walk into stores and we see all of the retail workers and to some degree the management too. Management, I give you guys tons of props too, because you're trying to manage the craziness most days. We see all of these retail workers all wearing like the same outfit, and they're all kind of just buzzing around doing the same thing, and it kind of just, they lose their personhood. You don't look at them as people. You look at them as, oh, they're there for me. They're basically my tool. They're a tool for me to use in this store right now. I can assure you that looking at retail workers as just tools of your own purposes is A, not only dehumanizing to them, but I guarantee you will not receive as good customer service if you just treat them as a tool. And overall, a lot of these tips are going to be just good life tips, just in general, just like good practices for like interactions and building relationships. Look at them as a person first and then as a worker. Okay. And all of these other tips are pretty much going to precipitate off of that idea. And yeah, I use the word precipitate. Put that in your lexicon for the week. It means something that comes off of something else. So these are all going to precipitate off of that idea. Look at them as a person first and then a worker. Because when you do that, you realize, ooh, wait a minute. They have, like, what does it mean to be a person? Oh boy, big philosophical discussion here. What does it mean to be a person? They have emotions. They have a will. They can interact with their surroundings. If you look at them as a person like you, you can empathize with them a lot better. But we'll talk about that more. In the second tip, which is be empathetic. Retail workers are not robots. I mean, yes, different stores and different places you work have different cultures. The place I worked had an incredible, just a very, very awesome, helpful culture. But you have to remember too that an individual is still an individual. You know, they're not a hive of bees per se. You know, they're individuals. So when you walk up to somebody and, you know, not every time you interact with a retail worker, they're not always going to be chipper and happy. They're going to be busy, and they're not going to look too thrilled to be there. And the same thing that I was told, you can apply the other way around as a customer. We're always told, you know, if a customer is getting upset and they're in a bad mood, you know, still give them just awesome customer service, because you don't know what the customer's going through. They, you know, when they get frustrated at you, they're probably just frustrated at something else. Flip the script. You should have the same attitude when you're a customer interacting with a worker. understand that, you know, they probably have 50 tasks that they're trying to do and they're trying to help people out. So just be mindful of the fact that they're not just a robot. They're not just a worker bee that just goes around and just everything's chipper and okay. Again, this goes back to look at them as a person. They have good days. They have bad days. They're really happy some days, and they're really sad or angry or frustrated the other days. Okay? So try to be empathetic. Try to put yourself in their shoes, especially if it's like really hot or if it's really busy. That's the other thing too. Be empathetic when it's really busy in the store. Just look around you and acknowledge the fact that, oh my gosh, they might be short-staffed. It looks like they're trying to sell like a lot of big, heavy items that require a lot of people. There's a lot of service going on, you know, whether that's setting something up on a computer or setting up a new phone for somebody or mixing paint or whatever that is. Those things require more people, more workers. So be empathetic and be in tune with the vibe of the store when you come in, because it'll just make your interactions better. Number three, here's a good one. If you need assistance, be aware of what a worker is doing. If you see a worker on the top of a ladder trying to carry boxes down a ladder by themselves, maybe go and try to find somebody else to help you out, unless it's with the thing that they're working with. Maybe go try to find somebody else. Very seldom a retail worker's main job is to just help customers. 99% of the time, that's not the case. 99% of the time, they not only have to balance customer service and helping people out with stocking, checking in merchandise, doing things on the computer, the other various service things that they have to do in the store, cleaning the store. There's so many things retail workers have to do that you don't even realize. So just be aware of what they're doing. And, you know, when you go to talk to them, if you need help, there's nothing wrong. They're there to help you. Like, that's what retail workers are there. They're there to help you. But when you ask questions, instead of just saying, like, walking up to them and saying, where's the glue? Like, wow, am I Siri? Siri, where's the glue? That's even more polite than just walking up to somebody saying, where's the glue? Or my favorite was when a customer would come up and say, they would just walk up to me. I'd be doing something. Walk up to me and just say, mousetraps? And outwardly, I'd be like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, let me show you where those are. Inwardly, I was like, yes, mousetraps. That's a noun. That's a part of the English language. A person, place, or thing. And in this case, it's a thing. That's not a question. That's not even a sentence, sir. Sir, that's not even a sentence. Mousetraps is not a sentence. It's not even an exclamation. It's just a word. Would you like me to define that for you? Mousetrap. Origin, probably Latin, because everything is Latin. So ask them a legitimate question. Here's a template. I'm going to give you a template. You could say something like, when you see a worker and they're doing something, but you need help, you could say, excuse me, do you have time to help me out with something? Because then you're acknowledging what they're doing. You're acknowledging that, hey, I need help, but I see that you're doing something right now. Can you help me? 99.99999% of the time, they're going to say, yeah, absolutely, I can help you with something. Or say, you know, hello, could you answer a question for me? Just acknowledging what they're doing goes so far. It always would make me feel like I was being seen and that I was a human being working when they would say something like what I just said, you know, do you have time to, could you help me out with something? These are all just like basic manners. If you basically just have basic manners with retail workers, they'll take care of you. Trust me. I mean, they'll take care of you regardless if it's a good culture, but just have basic manners and be considerate. I think that's what that one comes down to. Tip number four, use their name. This is a good one. This is actually a really good tip for just basic relationship building of any kind. Using a worker's name goes way farther than you think. And it's kind of a weird habit, because you're normally, at least with for me, I'm very used to not using workers' names. But now when I go to the grocery store or I go somewhere, they have a name tag for a reason. That's part of the uniform, typically. They have to wear a name tag. So use their name. Now, I'm not saying you go like full Andy Bernard on his first day of work at Dunder Mifflin with Michael, where he just like, he's like, name, how am I going to get to the top? Like gesture mimicking and a name repetition. And he just says Michael's name repeatedly. I'm not saying you have to do that, but like, for example, when I'm cashing out at the grocery store and the cashiers cash me out and they, you know, give me my change, I say, hey, Michael, thank you. Have a really good day. What you're doing in that instance is you're acknowledging them as an individual and not just a piece of tech, a piece of service technology or a robot that's just there that has no identity. When you recognize their identity, you know, by using their name, that goes so much further than you even could possibly realize. It makes them feel like a person. It would always make me, it would always make me feel more seen, more like a human being. It made it more personal, and those personal interactions are really, really important. That's something that we're taught is like to make that personal connection, not like overly personal, like what's your blood type, but you know, use their name, say, hi, you know, my name's Christian. What's your name? And just personalizing the interaction. You can do it the other way around too. Say, you know, if someone's helping you, say, oh, hey, what was your name? Oh, my name's so-and-so. Oh, so-and-so, I have a question. Da-da-da-da-da. Personalize the interaction. It will make the relationship much better. And again, these tips, when you apply them, they're going to make your customer service experience way better than if you're not doing them. You got to just trust me on that. Number five, oh boy. Put things back where you found them if you aren't buying it. Anybody out there that has ever worked in retail, you know what I'm talking about. When a customer picks something up and then they decide not to buy it and they just like put it on a shelf, just a random shelf. Oh, that's tough. Now, there's other reasons why that's annoying besides the fact that it's just an inconvenience. Number one, it makes the store look messy. And then the workers have to continue tidying up the store. Like the store can never stay clean for 5 seconds. Like it's just like this constant war trying to make the store look organized. It takes up a lot of time, just like generally, especially when you're doing stuff with like small items, like plumbing parts, for example. When people wouldn't put stuff back, it made it look like a mess and it was so meticulous and took so much time. The third one that you might not realize is that it makes it really, really tough to count inventory in the store when stuff is out of place. Because periodically, if you've never worked in retail, periodically, actually somewhat frequently, they do inventory checks and they count the merchandise, you know, what's actually there in the store versus like what's on hand in the system. That way they know if there's loss between the two, like if we lost anything or if we actually have more than we thought, which actually means we like got money back. When things are out of order, like let's say, and this is tough with like really expensive items. Let's say like a customer took a can of paint, an expensive can of paint, and they decided they didn't want it. They weren't going to do the project and they just put it back like behind another in a location where like a cheaper paint is. When they go to count that inventory, if that one is missing, we're going to assume that we just miscounted. And that's like a if it's expensive, it's like a $40, $50 loss right there. Now imagine that with tons of items in the store overall, that's going to really, really mess things up. It may, and loss prevention is its own beast to deal with. So when you have items, either put them back where you found them, or if you really, really don't want to go put them back, if you're really in a rush, give it to the cashier or find a worker and say, hi, excuse me, so-and-so, I don't want to purchase this anymore. Could I give this to you to put back? Even that's better than just leaving it somewhere. Because then at least the cashier can be like, you know, they can keep it up with other return items or whatever, or the worker can just be like, oh yeah, I'll take care of it, and they just put it back. At the very least, do that. Again, just being empathetic to what they have to do in the store is massive. Finally, grocery workers, you know what I'm about to say. If you have a shopping cart, just freaking put it back. Put it... Guys, it's like 30 seconds to walk a cart. Either to the cart corral, because when you put it in the cart corral, the people that are dedicated to do that job, to like corral the carts, it makes it so much easier, I would imagine. I didn't really have to do that. We didn't have cart corrals where I worked. But, or like, if you're working at a smaller store and it doesn't have a cart corral, bring the cart like to the front of the store, or even better, bring it back into the store and put it where you got the cart from. Like, do you know how annoying and inconvenient it is when people just leave their carts in parking spots? And then one poor friggin' sales associate has to go and gather up all the carts like you're gathering up baby ducklings that got scattered in a pond. And then try to like bring, and this happens, like it wouldn't have been uncommon for me to like corral like 6 or 7 carts. And I'm trying to like steer them, like I'm trying to steer like a bull back to their location and then put them back. Like it's just a total waste of time. And a bad attitude to have as a customer, and I'm going to get a little spicy here. Terrible attitude to have as a customer is you do something that inconveniences the workers and just say, well, that's their job. I'm giving them a job. It's like, no, dude, no, you don't even know. Me fixing your laziness is not part of my job. My job is to give amazing customer service and take care of my store. That's my job. Correcting for laziness is not part of my job. You'll have to do it. Like, it's going to happen. But again, just be considerate. It takes 5 seconds. Get those extra steps in, guys. Bring the cart back. Put it in the cart corral. Take it back into the store. When I would see a customer have merchandise, take it to their car in their cart, and then walk the cart back into the store, oh my gosh, my heart would soar. It would soar in the sky. And I would personally go out of my way to thank that customer. I would say, thank you for bringing those carts back. And sometimes customers were really awesome and they would go actually bring, they would like gather up a couple carts and bring them back in. That was the best. Oh my gosh, that was the best. We love those customers. The customers that were always loved and the ones that we always loved to take care of were the ones that were the most considerate of us. The ones that didn't abuse us and look at us like every time, you know, a product didn't work when they got it, they would look at us as like, we made that product so they can get mad at us. You know, so overall, the best way to be a good customer is to look at, be empathetic and look at each worker and management as a person. Solve the problem with them as opposed, like, especially if like a product like was like defective or something, the you think the manager or the retail worker is happy that the product was defective? They aren't. That doesn't make them happy. They don't want you to go home with a product that doesn't work. Like 90% of the time, your problem was our problem. Like, we made your problem our problem. We want to work with you to solve the problem. It's not you as the customer versus them as the worker. It's you and you as the customer and the worker trying to solve the problem together. If you go into it with that attitude, oh my gosh, you'll get the best customer service experience. Because who doesn't respond kindly to kindness? Nobody. So it's just overall just being aware and being empathetic and looking at workers, retail workers, as human beings. That's what it really comes down to. So that's my rant. So I think that was 6. Guys, it's really hot. It's super humid today. It's almost too humid. But so now we're going to do a segment that we haven't done in a long time. And that's Google's got questions and I've got answers because I'm always right. Google's going to ask us some questions, and I'm going to give you the objectively absolute answer to those questions. I was thinking about fears, because everybody has fears. So Google's going to ask me, why are humans afraid of bugs? Good question. We have a deep thing within our brains. We have this ancient history knowledge that back in the day, bugs used to be the size of human beings. And have you ever seen like a grasshopper's head up close? It is the most mortifying thing to look at. Google grasshoppers' heads up close and tell me that's not nightmare fuel. It's horrifying. I find spider heads to be cuter than grasshopper heads. They're bizarre. So we had this ancient fear of bugs because they used to be human-sized and they used to be sentient. So they could like walk around, they would hunt human beings. And that memory is still built into our genetic coding. Can you even imagine a grasshopper the size of a human? Can you imagine how high that thing could jump? It could leap. It would be like Superman. It could leap tall buildings in a single leap. Speaking of bugs, stop squishing bugs. Like, can we get over that? Like, I know we have this ancient fear of bugs, but like, can we stop squishing bugs? Can we just like put them in a little container and like let them free? Like, bugs are life too, man. Come on. Jeez. So that's why we're afraid of bugs. But we don't need to be afraid of bugs. Unless it's like a black widow spider or a scorpion that can poison and kill you. No need. No need. Let the bugs free, man. Why are humans afraid of the dark? Good question. Because back in the day, again, this goes back to our ancient genetic coding. In the dark, there used to be several mythical creatures that were alive that would exclusively hunt in the dark. I'm talking things like the Wendigo, the Rake, the Jersey Devil. All of these were more nocturnal-ish creatures, and they would come and hunt you. They would come and hunt you, and they would eat your toes. Yep, you heard it correct. The Wendigo would come and eat your toes, but it was only in the dark. So we built up this natural fear of the dark. Now, all things in seriousness, the reason why I think humans are afraid of the dark is because in the dark you can't see anything, and humans are very, very visually heavy creatures. We will always go by sight first, which is, I think, probably the source of why human beings are a lot of the troubles that we have exist is because we go by sight first versus feeling or logic, perhaps. I'm not going to get into that conversation just yet, but I think it's when it's dark, we lose all of our visual perception, and humans have this innate fear of the unknown because we think if we don't know what it is, it can hurt us. I think that's why a lot of people are afraid to hear like the opposite side of an argument that they believe to be true. Especially with politics, they're afraid to dabble with like the other side's argument because we're afraid that we could be wrong. So we have this fear of the unknowing. So I think that's why actually we're afraid of the dark, but it's probably most likely because the Rake and the Wendigo and the Jersey Devil are going to come and eat our toes, most likely. Oh, there's another question. Why are humans afraid of the unknown? I already answered that. Why are humans afraid of heights? Because human beings are afraid to spread their wings and fly. Did you know? I was going to make a joke. I was going to be like, did you know that human beings can fly? Don't fly. You can't fly. We're not built like birds. We do not have hollow bones. We do not have things that can catch air underneath them. We can't fly unless you're in a plane. Don't even try it. The thing is like human beings are not really afraid of heights per se. This is a legitimate thought. I didn't think Google's got questions and I've got answers because I'm always right was going to be like me legitimately answering the question. Human beings are not afraid of heights. They're afraid of falling. That's the difference. When you are really high up, you're not afraid of being high up. You're afraid of falling off from that high place. So you're afraid of like going into like you're afraid of not of quickly being from a high location to a low location, which is a similar reason as to why human beings are so not cool with change. It's not that the change itself is what people are afraid of. It's the process of the change that people are afraid of. Like people don't, because we know that like change, anytime you're changing or you're adapting to something, it's not fun typically. Like when you start a new job or you start a new workout plan or you get married or you start a new relationship, when things are different, the process of change is very scary. It's not the change itself that's scary. Like, you know that, like let's say the habit, like you want to have like a habit of working out where like you can work out and you don't even think about it anymore. That's a good thing. That change is good. You're not afraid of that. You're afraid of the process of like starting and having to do it every day and having to sweat and like be tired some days. And then you have to adjust like what you eat and you have to adjust the things in your schedule to make time for working out. That's what human beings are afraid of. So I think it's the same reason. Like, why are humans afraid of heights? They're not really afraid of heights. You're afraid of falling. Which makes sense, because if you fall from a high location, you're gonna go splat. So anyways, this has been Google's Got Questions, and I've got answers, because I'm always right. And now we have our
Wreck of the Week.
I also realize I say our and we probably more than I should, because like it almost sounds like I'm like representing a corporation. I'm not. I'm just me. My wreck of the week is an album that fundamentally changed my life, not only my music life, but I think the way I engage my emotions. That's kind of a weird way to put it, but the album is called Crack Up by Fleet Foxes. It's their most recent album, and I say most recent. It came out in 2016. Quick story about that. I was in Barnes & Noble with my little sister, Maria, who was on last week's episode. Check out episode 9, where we talk about social media from a Zoomer. We were in Barnes & Noble. I think we were actually looking for cookbooks. And a song came on the radio. And I was like, what is this? Like, at the time, I was listening to 2016. Listening to a kind of a lot of music, mostly like early 70s singer-songwriter type stuff, country. Like I was, my music styling, that's its own story, but nothing really super challenging music-wise to like listen to like really engaged all of me. Well, there was a song on the radio, and I was like, what is this? Like what, I've never heard music that sounded like this before. And it was the track 3rd of May / Odaigahara, if we're using the technical term. Thankfully, I had Shazam on my phone, so I could be like, oh, what song is this? And I'm glad I did, because that fundamentally changed the way I did music. I would not be a songwriter right now without that moment happening in my life. It's kind of funny how you look back, and there's like these small, innocuous moments that have like these lasting impacts on who you are as a person. And that was one of them. Like, if I wasn't in Barnes & Noble at that time, at that day, at that moment, and I caught it in this part of the song where I could like actually catch it, I would have like, I wouldn't probably be the same person. So anyways, so the song 3rd of May came on and I was like, this is like cinematic. It's like it's a folk song. It's a song, but it sounds like it's like a movie soundtrack. And I ended up going home and listening to the whole album, and it literally plays like a movie. That's how well Robin Pecknold, the lead singer, songwriter, also plays guitar in the band, he wrote it. It has this cinematic quality to it, and yet it's very distinctly indie folk, and more indie. Their folk stuff was the earlier couple albums. But, I mean, if you want to be taken somewhere, listen to the album Crack Up by Fleet Foxes. 3rd of May, fun fact, is decidedly my favorite song of all time. And for a long time, I didn't have a favorite song, because I was like, oh, I like different songs for different reasons. 3rd of May is definitively my favorite song. I hear sounds. So my wreck of the week is Crack Up by Fleet Foxes. Sit down, lay down, you know, take an hour or two and just sit and enjoy it in peace and let it take you somewhere, because it's truly a beautiful piece of work. Thank you guys for listening. Made it to episode 10. We did it. I hope you use some of those tips on how to be a better customer. Again, check out the Lowlands EP. It's on Spotify. You can just type in Christian Jude. There's like 50 Christian Judes on Spotify. Mine's the one that has the cool like space thing with like a sketched in drawing of my face. That's me. Check out the Lowlands EP. Follow me on all the socials. And, you know, we will see you next week when we talk about getting older and what that means and what that looks like, because it'll be my birthday. So have a tremendous, tremendous week, day, life, all of that. Listen to Crack Up. Do it.